Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Loaded podcast coming up. Welcome in. I am Doug Kazarian. A little bit later posting on this podcast. Had some technical issues, but we have plenty of content. We're taping this Wednesday, October 31st. Halloween, also known as Nick Saban's birthday. We'll get into Alabama, LSU, the big rivalry game out in Death Valley at night at Tiger Stadium. Phil Steele's going to join us, give us his plays. He has six coming up. John Murray going to break down that Bama LSU game and also have five plays from behind the counter. And Brad Edwards from our analytics team and my former co-host with College Game Day on ESPN Radio is going to step in before he heads down to the Bayou and offer his analysis on why he likes Bama in a blowout. So good stuff straight ahead. I'll have some leans at least early in the week, and we'll post those on Twitter later in the week. At Doug ESPN is my Twitter handle, but a lot of good content straight ahead as we set the table for the Thursday podcast, which should be great. So again, college football here on Wednesdays, NFL on Thursdays, and obviously Bear and Stanford Steve have their podcast on the new umbrella for them, Stanford Steve and the Bear. Thanks to everyone for listening. Let's get to it.
Stop. Hammer time.
Time to bring in the machine that is Phil Steele. Phil, how are you, man?
You know, I am doing great, Doug, but not as great as you. Another big 3-0 week this week for you.
You know, it's funny. I joked. I was like, much like, you know, Kobe proved he was able to win NBA championships without Shaq, I was able to go 3-0 without Alabama first half.
Amazing job.
It was a late decision I had to make. Do I go Oregon against Arizona, or do I go Houston against South Florida? And I end up going the Cougs, and obviously it proved to be the right choice.
Great call, my man. Great call, and wow, what a run this year.
Yeah, I believe it's 20-7 on SportsCenter hits. Not as strong in my column. I've had a few more losses. I don't know. I'm going to guess like 18-14 when you factor in the NFL. Maybe not even above 500. I don't know. NFL's really hard. But it is what it is. I've been happy. Been good run, but got to keep grinding. As you know, you had a step back last week. Understandable. Can't win. Can't crush it every week. No one wins every week or 17 straight weeks in the NFL. All that. You got to weather the storm, so to speak.
Yeah, that is correct. There's always going to be those winning weeks, and just when you think you got it all figured out, you're going to have a weekend. And, you know, it was a weekend where, nine top 25 teams went down, eight of them against unranked foes.
It was a screwy week, a lot of upsets. I mean, I just mentioned that I liked Oregon, put that in the column, and they got waxed. I mean, I don't even know how. I still don't understand how they lost. And I actually like them a lot this weekend, and I want to get into that game. But let's get into your picks for the weekend. Let's start with Texas A&M because this line's a head scratcher here. Auburn's got no offense, but they are coming off a bye, and this one is home at the Plains or on the Plains.
Yeah, and I think the reason Auburn's favored may but just be the last game for each team. You know, Auburn got their run game going. They averaged 5.8 yards per carry, and Texas A&M got whipped by Mississippi State by 15 points last week. But when you delve into it a little bit more, you see that you know that Auburn played Mississippi's defense last week, which allows pretty much everybody to run for 5.8 yards per carry. And this week they run into Texas A&M's defense, giving up just 87 yards per game on the ground and 3.3 yards per carry. And really, a good bulk of Mississippi State's rush yards last week came on that late run by Fitzgerald. A&M was down 8, got intercepted in the end zone, and then Mississippi State just ran out the clock. Fitzgerald ripped off a 76-yard run. So they only had 66 yards rushing. Prior to that, maybe a little tackle on the football and maybe a little stack in the line of scrimmage. And I think A&M's got a formidable run defense to slow down this Auburn offense, which Auburn looked pretty pedestrian when they don't have their run game. They lost to Tennessee. They lost that same Mississippi State team by 14. The Arkansas game, they got outgained by 65 yards. I like how A&M's playing. They played a tougher schedule this year. They match up well, and I think the fact they're off a misleading final. I don't really think they were 15 points weaker than Mississippi State last week. Like I said, intercepting the end zone, then a long touchdown run. I like the Aggies plus the points. I think they should be favored in the game.
It is a surprising line. Makes me really concerned. that I like the dog so much in that. It's, you almost wonder why they're favored like that for a reason. But then again, there's a lot of, you know, skewed lines, so to speak, in sports. Let's talk about another game in the SEC. Wild ending with Missouri and Kentucky. That was a line that stunk a week ago, but the dog ended up covering and obviously won outright. And here, Mizzou trying to get up off the mat and play Florida here.
Yeah, and amazingly, Missouri had a grand total of zero first downs in the second half of that game. In fact, they got outgained by Kentucky 385 to 249. So as much as the punt return touchdown and the untimed down touchdown happened, Kentucky probably deserved to win the game with that kind of yardage edge, first down edge of 21 to 13. And the Drew Lock saga continues.
Yeah, you nailed it. You were ahead of the curve for a while.
Yeah, if he takes on a Power 5 bowl team, 24 touchdowns, 29 interceptions. When he takes on anybody else, a Group of 5 or a Power 5 non-bowl team, 61 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. Florida, they're going to make a bowl. In fact, they probably have the fastest defense in the SEC. They're also among my leaders in pass defense. And when you look at the Gators, they're off a game last week where they lost to Georgia by 19 points. But once again, the -3 in turnovers really had a huge factor in that. They led 14-13 in the third quarter, had their opportunities. Now they're back in the swamp. The last time they were in the swamp, they beat LSU by 8 points. And here they're laying 5.5 to Missouri at home. I think Missouri has proven that when they face a Power 5 bowl team, they struggle. And Florida is probably one of the better teams they've taken on this year, with the exception of Alabama and Georgia. I like Florida to get this one by more than the touchdown.
And the emotional read of the Tigers that put so much into this deflating loss. I mean, this is a tough ask for a team that, you know, is not exactly conditioned to handle these spots.
And taking on a Florida team off a loss. The last time Florida was off a loss, they beat Colorado State 48-10 at home. So I like the fact that the Gators, off a loss, really have no pressure on them right now. They're not contending for the SEC East. They just need to win and win big, and I think they can win out the rest of the year.
I agree. A game you also like that I'm on is Sparty. Lot of variables here given what's going on with the Terps this week, but Michigan State laying 2 on the road with a backup quarterback.
Yeah, and you remember our conversation last week. You asked about the Maryland game, and I said Maryland was a team that they win when they can run the football, and they were taking an Illinois team that was giving up gobs of yards on the ground. In fact, Maryland ran for 431 yards, 9.0 yards per carry, and you look at their wins this year, they're averaging about 400 yards per game rushing in their last 4 wins. But against good defenses, I'm talking Temple, I'm talking Michigan, I'm talking Iowa, they have struggled to run the football, and they pretty much have got blown out. 21-point loss to Temple at home probably wasn't that close. Temple absolutely obliterated them. 61 yards in the first half for Maryland. The Michigan game, same thing. 42 yards in the first half. Iowa, how about 46 yards? I'm not talking rushing. I'm talking total yards. 61, 42, and 46 yards in the first half of those games. Got some late scores in a couple of them to make it appear. And so you wonder, can Michigan State stop the run? The answer is yes. They're only allowing 77 yards per game on the ground. They just held Purdue, an explosive Purdue team, to 175 yards below their season average last week. Tough run defense. We'll be able to shut down that run. And if you shut down Maryland's run, you could beat them. And then, as you mentioned, now you've got the DJ Durkin situation going around. Players, normally a happy situation when your coach comes back. Instead, they announce he's coming back. He goes in the locker room, and players are walking out of the locker room unhappy. That creates a little bit of dissension in the locker room. I think it's a Michigan State team that'll definitely handle this on the road. And they're laying less than a field goal. I like the Spartans in this one.
Yeah, I do too, definitely. Another game. Let's go Big 12 now. And it's a big number on the road, but then again, then you realize that these teams might put up 100. So maybe laying 13.5 is not that big of an ask with the Oklahoma Sooners.
Yeah, the last couple of times, the last time Oklahoma traveled here, 66-59. So it's like, wow. But, you know, when I look at this Oklahoma team, I go back to the Texas game. Texas up by 3 scores on them. I believe it was in the fourth quarter, and you're like, okay, that's done deal. And when a blink of an eye, Oklahoma had 21 points on the board and it tied the game, and their offense just continues to percolate. Now, last week, I thought K-State had a shot against them. 702 yards offense, 51 points, led that thing 34-7 at the half. And defensively, Ruffin McNeil, great interview if you ever get a chance to talk to the guy. But since he's taken over as defensive coordinator, they have held TCU to 275, K-State to 245. They held those two teams to 130 yards below their season average. So they're playing better defense. They've got the explosive offense. Texas Tech's a great story, playing good. They have an improved defense this year, but not a good enough defense to slow down this Oklahoma offense. And I don't think Oklahoma's going to be intimidated by the site. They know that the last time they traveled here was a close game. And right now, the way that offense is operating, I'm willing to lay a couple of touchdowns, or actually less than two touchdowns, 13.5 here. I like the Sooners to go on the road and get the win here. I think they're clearly one of the best teams in college football. And Texas Tech is a good team, but not anywhere near Oklahoma's level.
Yep, I agree with everything you said. I feel that's spot on. Let's go off the grid a little bit. Two games, but they cash the same, as we always like to chuckle. Starting with Louisiana Monroe catching more than a touchdown to Georgia Southern.
Yeah, now this one's got it all for me as far as sandwich game and as far as misleading game as well. Now, ULM, and also situational edge. So you take a look at ULM, they've sort of been the king of getting teams in the sandwich situation, and I'll explain that. Last year, they caught Auburn the week after Auburn beat Georgia with Alabama on deck. And in that game, they played a real good game. Auburn got two late scores to win by 28, but they easily covered. This year, they caught Texas A&M in a sandwich between Clemson and Alabama. And at the half, ULM actually had a 261 to 218 yard edge. Now, a couple of fluky turnovers that cost them the cover in that, but they played a good game in College Station. Now they catch Georgia Southern. Now, Georgia Southern is a team that wasn't really expected to compete their division. The division was between Appalachian State and Troy. Well, guess what? They knocked off App State last week. They've got Troy on deck next week. If they beat Troy, they win the division. They're in the first ever Sun Belt game. This week they're playing a crossover team, ULM. So that's the sandwich situation. It's as big as you can get for Georgia Southern. The second is the situation. When you play the option, you like to have extra time to prepare. Guess what? ULM is off a bye prior to play in Georgia Southern here. That's another plus. And then the third factor here is last week's 34-14 win over App State for Georgia Southern. It appears to be a dominant win. But they only had 334 yards offense, and App State lost their quarterback on the first series. The backup quarterbacks combined for five turnovers. So facing a backup quarterback that had never really played, they got a plus five in turnovers, won the game 34-14. It appears that they're a machine. They've only had 215 yards against Texas State. In fact, on the year, Georgia Southern is actually averaging 48 yards per game, less than what their opponents normally allow. That's number 109 in the country. So the situation, the sandwich, and the misleading fact all have me on ULM plus 7.5 at home. And ULM's got four wins, a win here, and they're probably going to head to bowl eligibility this year, and they've been playing better as of late.
Going with the Warhawks.
There you go.
Why not? All right, so one more game. Marshall laying three on the road at Southern Miss.
Yeah, and you, first of all, this is another one of those lines where you scratch your head a little bit, that Marshall's only a three-point favorite. When you look at Southern Miss this year, I look at who Southern Miss has beaten. They beat Jackson State, they beat Rice, and they beat UTSA. And all three of those teams are among the bottom of the country. Last week they went into Charlotte and lost that one by three on the road. So they really haven't beaten anybody all season. And their quarterback, Jack Abraham, having a decent season, but still a 13-10 ratio. The Miss Marshall team is a very good team. One of the top teams in CUSA. They just waxed FAU 31-7. They went on the road and beat Old Dominion 42-20. And they may get Isaiah Green back at QB. Remember, Green went out a couple weeks ago with injury. Alex Thompson was much talked about in the preseason as a possible NFL guy. Did okay in his place, but Green's a little bit more dynamic of an athlete. Tyler King's been running the ball great. Defensively, Marshall can put the pressure on you. They've got a great pass rushers across the board, one of the better defenses out there. So add it all up, I think Marshall's clearly the better team. Southern Miss comes in here with three wins, but those three wins are all against very weak teams. I like Marshall to go on the road and get the win, and they're only laying a field goal.
All right, those are six plays. Let's get back on track with those. I want to talk to you about some of the high-profile games, though. Obviously, the start in Death Valley and Baton Rouge. What do you make of this Bama line here with LSU?
appears to be a pretty high line. When you look at these two teams defensively, you'd have to put them pretty close. Statistically, Alabama's actually holding their foes to a little bit better margin, but LSU's played the tougher schedule. So I think I would actually give slightest of edges to LSU's defense. But offensively, in my mind, there's no question who's superior. I mean, offensive line edge, Alabama. You look at the running backs, Najee Harris, Damian Harris, Josh Jacobs and company. I'll take all those guys over the LSU running backs. Receiving core still going to go with Bama. And then quarterback, you've got Tua Tagovailoa, who's got a 25-0 ratio versus Joe Burrow. And I love Joe Burrow. Great game manager, but not very dynamic. So I think with Alabama, they haven't played their quarterback, Tua, in the fourth quarter. They're going to definitely need to play four quarters. And this is one of those games where, you know, Alabama hasn't really been fired up for any opponent all year long. I know it's Death Valley. I know it's night, but you're also going to get an A++ game from Alabama because they haven't had to play a big game all season. So even though the spread's high, I just think that Alabama's the stronger team. And now they've played national title games, SEC title games. They've dealt with crowds before. I think Alabama can handle it. I'm actually laying the points here. I got it to be 37-17 Alabama.
Yeah, I like the Tide here. Obviously, I've been on the Tide all season, particularly in the first half. I wanted to ask you about line value here because so often we've talked about how there's line value with Alabama in the first half because you get full Tua versus the full game. You don't get Tua in the fourth quarter. You haven't gotten him all season. And that Saban just, you know, runs the clock at the end with the reserves, and there's the backdoor cover potential, and that's obviously happened a few times against the Tide this year. So there's just allure and value betting Bama in the first half. However, those are with blowout point spreads. This is not a blowout point spread, so to speak. It's two touchdowns and then some, but not the 20s and 30s that we have seen throughout the course of the season. So I actually don't think there is significant line value in Bama first half this particular week.
Yeah, and what's the halftime line on this one?
Well, you got to guess it because it's not posted till Thursday, but we're looking at, what, nine-ish? 8.5, 9, 9.5?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I agree with it, what you just said.
Now, you may like the first half line to bet, but it's not because of the Tua variable. It's for different reasons.
Right, right. And the other factor to throw in here is it's a big game. Okay, so at the end of the game now, let's say LSU is down 13, 14 points, and they've got the ball at their own 20, and there's 7 minutes to go in the game. They may just go for it. And if they do, you know, because they feel they can win the game, that's a plus for the favorite at that point. So it is one of those cases where you may get some points late in the game. But like I said with the streaks, Doug, you've been winning with that over on the first half every single week. Don't jump off that streak until it actually ends.
Right, but the reasons I was winning with it are not applicable in this case. I'd rather bet Bama for the game.
Okay,
like,
fair
that's
enough.
My point. I'm not betting against them.
I agree with you with Bama, though.
Yeah, how about the Georgia-Kentucky game? I mean, obviously a wild situation with Kentucky last week and the ending that we talked about already, but really the point spread was kind of fishy. Here they are, big dogs, you know, single-digit dogs against Georgia.
Well, you know, I like Kentucky. I think they can match up with Georgia at the line of scrimmage in this game. You look at Georgia even last week against Florida, gave up 4.6 yards per carry. I felt Florida could run the football on them. They did the majority of the game. Ended up, when they got down, threw the ball a little bit more at the end. I thought LSU dominated the line of scrimmage, 275 to 113 yard edge. I thought Missouri controlled the line of scrimmage against Georgia. And Kentucky, that's been their calling card all year. Control the line of scrimmage, win the game. I was a little surprised that Kentucky got held to 91 yards rushing by Missouri last week. But once again, Missouri's playing pretty good on that defensive front seven, and also to 70 yards by Texas A&M. But I do think they'll be able to run the ball on Georgia, and that means they've got themselves a chance. Now, throwing the football, Georgia's favor. This is one game that I'm personally staying away from, Doug, because I think if you play it on paper, you got to go Kentucky plus the points. They're that good, but it's a big game. When's the last time Kentucky had a game this big, this type of stage during the year? Meanwhile, Georgia just played in a national championship game. They played in an SEC title game. They played big games, you know, last year down the stretch to get there. I think Georgia's more big game ready for this one coming in. So it's to me, it's one of those that I tossed out because I can make a case for Kentucky, but I can also make one for Georgia in the fact this is a huge game.
It certainly is. There's a case. I mean, this it's a tough read of the situation, that one, because Kentucky has just been proving doubters wrong all year.
Yeah, and they're doing it at the line of scrimmage. That's the thing. If like last week's game against Missouri was fluky, they were outplayed and somehow got two freak plays at the end and covered and won the game outright, that's one thing. But they had a 385 to 249 yard edge last week. So, and Terry Wilson actually proved that he could throw the football, threw for 294 yards. Missouri's game plan coming in was, we're going to stop the run and make Terry Wilson beat us through the air. And he beat him through the air. It took a long time, last play of the game, in fact, with no time left on the clock, but he did. I don't think you'll see Georgia have the same approach this week.
I want to ask you about this Oregon game. Is Spate playing for UCLA?
Spate should play. He doesn't scare me as much as Dorian Thompson does.
Well, that's the thing. If Spate plays, I don't you have to hammer Oregon?
Yeah, now the question is, Herbert, quarterback for Oregon, is coming in, questionable coming in. But I do like the Ducks here. Back at home, you know, that last week was their third straight tough game. They're on the road. Night home dogs last week, Doug, as I learned my lesson, I went 0-2 against them. Night home dogs are like 5-0, 100% last week. Crowds get all fired up at night for that. So they went into an environment. I was surprised the way that Herbert played last week, but now they're back at home in Autzen. And yeah, this is a team in UCLA that they had two, what I think was fake wins this year. You look at the California game, while they won, they benefited from +5 in turnovers from Brandon McIlwain turning it over the entire game. And then the Arizona game, they got outgained by 60 yards. Arizona had a couple of things go wrong, and it was a struggling Arizona team that outgained them, and that was at home. They don't play well on the road. I just think that Oregon back at home should be able to crush them. I personally had the lineup like 17-21 in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think Oregon should run for like 350 yards just on the ground.
Yeah, and that's what's been missing the last 2 weeks for them, has been the ground game. But UCLA has given up 5.1 yards per carry. It's sort of like the Maryland-Illinois game last week we talked about. You know, you've got a team that is giving up huge amounts of yards on the ground. In Pac-12 play, 230 yards per game, 5.1 yards per carry.
Another game I'm looking at, and this is just an ugly dog, but Phil, I'm old enough to remember when Louisville and Clemson was a one-possession game on the point spread. Now we're looking at 38.5. What's happened to Bobby Petrino?
Yeah. You're leading with the dog in this one, Doug?
I do. I think it's a lot of points. I don't know if I could. I certainly can't lay 38.5. I mean, I have in the past with some crazy spreads and crazy situations, but I leaned with the dog there.
Okay. Well, I personally liked Louisville last week. I thought there was a backs-to-the-wall game against Wake Forest. In fact, I even used them on your damn podcast here, Doug, and that was just a rough game for me to watch. At least I was able to take it from TV number 3 all the way back to TV number 8 by halftime.
Got demoted,
yeah. You knew that. Yeah, they had no chance whatsoever. They couldn't stop Wake Forest, and this was not a juggernaut Wake Forest offense that they gave up 591 yards to last week. And offensively, I mean, it's fits and spurts for them. Yeah, they score from time to time, but this is a Clemson defense that just doesn't give up anything. And if Clemson could go into Florida State last week, Florida State been playing better, they're a home underdog, it's a rivalry game, and beat them 59-10, I just wonder what Louisville's got left to play for. It's not like they're going to win this game. Their season's basically over. There's no bowl game. Their defense has been horrific, and their offense has been bad, and Clemson's just humming. I understand where the value play comes in here. My computer, though, let me see what my computer has on this one. It is, I believe it was 51-3 was what the forecast was. So I can't walk up to the window and put money down on Louisville right now.
Yeah, I probably won't. I'm just saying lines that catch my eye. I like to talk it out. I like to start the process.
Sure.
And any action for you the next couple nights? You know how our listeners like to get in the midweek football now that the baseball season's over.
Yeah, there's one I like, and it's on Thursday. And it's Ohio U against Western Michigan.
Ooh.
Now, the one thing is you are dealing with a couple of somewhat misleading finals. Ohio's off a big blowout win that probably wasn't as big a blowout as it was last week. Western's off a big blowout loss that wasn't quite as big a blowout as it appeared on paper. But It is an Ohio team that at the start of the year I thought would have one of the best offenses in the country, and they are percolating right now. Nathan Rourke at QB is running, passing. The last 2 weeks they've got combined about 575 yards per game, and they are moving the football. And defensively, now, when I talked to their defensive coordinator, Burrow, at the start of the year, who's Burrow's dad, he said he was a little concerned about the defensive line. And you look at their first five games this year, they were giving up about 550 yards per game. But the last three games, they've cut it down to about 340 yards per game. They're playing a lot better up front. That young defensive line has matured. So I like Ohio. I think they're a team that's really good to come on down the stretch. Now, Western lost their quarterback last week in Wozniak, and he is going to miss this game. So it's up to Caleb Ellaby to make his first career start. He threw the ball well against Toledo, but that's coming off the bench. Now he's making a start. It's a big game. Western's won some close games, but that was with the more veteran Wozniak in there. And I like Frank Solich, especially this time of year. It's probably one of the healthier teams he's had, which is something he normally doesn't have this late in the year. So Ohio's laying less than a field goal in this one. They're laying about two. I'm taking the Bobcats.
All right, good stuff. There's three interesting games on Thursday. We got one tonight, Toledo laying 18.5 against Ball State at the Glass Bowl. All right, my man, always good catching up. Thanks for the perspective, and let's get back on track this week.
All right, sounds good, Doug. I'm certainly hoping for it, my friend.
Just remember,
it's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Soothing words from Bob Lee. All right, bud, take
That's
care.
Great. All right, thanks, Doug. Have a good one.
You too. All right, that does it for Phil Steele. His six plays, Auburn, Florida, Oklahoma, Sparty, Louisiana Monroe, and Marshall. Coming up next, John Murray, Mr. Director, the lad from the Superbook at the Westgate will join us.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Mr. Director John Murray joins us. Out there in Las Vegas, I know we'll talk about it tomorrow on the NFL pod, Murray, but another winner for you and Mr. Musburger.
Yeah, thank God I gave Musburger a winner. I could tell when I was there last Tuesday that he was disappointed in my Bears pick. Like, just the way he was talking to me and the way he was looking at me. But then when he saw me yesterday, I was in studio at the South Point yesterday, he kind of waved me over. Hey, how you doing, lad? So I guess to keep him happy, I got to feed him NFL winners. That's no small task, Doug. NFL is so hard.
Yeah, I saw that you got a lad reply on Twitter, so I was very impressed.
Yeah, I'm back in his good graces after the Seattle pick. I really didn't like anything in the NFL last week, so that was I came up with that one somehow. We could have got the over, too. I know you and I talked about it on Sunday. Seattle had a couple empty possessions when they were inside the red zone. I think they had one possession where they had second and goal inside the 1 yard line and came away with nothing.
Yeah, a lot of hairy outcomes, including one in the bonanza. So we'll talk about all that. You got the W. The duffel bag boy, duffel bag better, Nutball University, whatever it is, he took one on the chin last week, didn't he?
Yeah, he bet Purdue on all of his tickets here. He did a 30K straight bet on Purdue at Pick'em. He did two parlays, one for $15,000 and one for $10,000 that both included Purdue. So the Michigan State game wiped him out here at our book. I heard that he bought Purdue Pick'em up to Purdue plus a half at another book around town. I don't understand why. They asked me on the radio this morning, why would anybody do that? I said, I have no idea. You'd have to ask that person. I mean, college football games can't end in a tie. Yeah, no, that's what I was told.
That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
Well, college football games can't end in a tie, last time I checked, Doug. So I don't know why you would pay the extra 10% juice and get that plus a half, but that's what I'm told he did. I mean, the guy is he's a cowboy.
Yeah, that's a head scratcher. So big loss for the DBB, as he is widely known. I want to talk about the team Purdue lost to, and that's Michigan State. They're on the road against Maryland. We've seen this line go up to -2 from -1. I think the steam is in the wake of the situation with Maryland, players walking out of a team meeting, DJ Durkin being retained. Now, obviously, that is a much more serious matter than talking about a point spread, but there is a domino effect to this. And what kind of action have you seen on that game?
You know, the money on that game hasn't really showed up yet, but I think you're exactly right. I think that the reason why the number is moving towards Michigan State is because of the perception that Maryland is just completely dysfunctional right now. And I can see why people think that.
And Sparty's got a stout run defense, and that's what that's what Maryland needs to do in order to win games, is run the football. That's why they, you know, they struggled against Iowa in that 25-mile-per-hour wins, because they knew Iowa defense knew Maryland couldn't throw it all, so they stacked the run, and then, sure enough, Maryland got blanked, I believe, if I remember correctly. So I kind of like Sparty in that situation. I know it's on the road, and I know it's a backup quarterback, but pure dysfunction right now with the Terps. What games has money already showed up on, given it's – actually, before we get into that, let's talk about the big kahuna down in the Bayou. Alabama.
Yes.
LSU, both teams coming off a bye. I see this number hit 13.5, and now it's through 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be a game where, I don't want to get you too excited, but I think the public is actually going to line up a lot on the dog in this game, man.
Ooh.
I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of public support for LSU, especially on the money line. Right now here at the Superbook, we have the LSU money line at 5-1. And I know that people are going to want to do – there's going to be a lot of straight bet action on LSU at 5-1, LSU plus the points. Now, don't get me wrong. Alabama is going to be included in a lot of parlays. There's going to be plenty of parlay support for the Crimson Tide. But I think the straight bets are really going to be more on LSU. This should be the most heavily bet college football game of the year to date by far.
Now, why do you think the money's going to show up on the dog more than usual?
Well, I think that like when you look at that line, your initial reaction is LSU is getting how many points at home on a Saturday night in Death Valley? LSU's no slouch themselves. I know we've been talking all year about how great Alabama is, but I don't think there's any team in the country that has a more impressive body of work in terms of quality wins than LSU does. And I was the guy that was making fun of LSU in the preseason. They've made me look completely foolish this year with all their quality wins. So I can see why people are talking themselves into LSU, looking at how easy of a schedule Alabama has played, and saying that they can't resist those 15 points or that money line of 5-1.
It's a great point. I was talking to someone last week about futures, and they said if you're not betting on Clemson or Bama to win it all, you're throwing away money. I said, hold on a sec. I need to see this weekend first. I need to see Bama LSU, and then I'll tell you everything. Then I'll tell you my opinion about Bama. Because Bama's looked great. They're world beaters, and for good reason. But they haven't faced anyone. So there is a chance that they're not as great as we all thought.
There's a chance. And look who LSU has played. LSU played Miami, Florida on a neutral field. They played Georgia. They played at the Florida Gators. They played at Auburn. I mean, they've had a really difficult schedule. Very impressive that they only have one loss coming into this game. But it's hard to get in the way of that Alabama train, man. I mean,
their defense isn't that
scary.
Good. Their defense is not that good.
No. By Alabama standards, this is not a particularly good defensive team. It's just such a big difference now where they can actually throw the ball down the field. They can get behind, and they can come from behind. And I think that's the biggest difference between Alabama this year and last year. I feel the same way about Clemson. Last year, Clemson had no ability to throw the ball down the field, and they can now with the new quarterback, Lawrence, the freshman.
I've made the analogy all season that Alabama is the New Orleans Saints. They have a diminutive quarterback. I can't think of a better word, a short stature, I don't know, whatever you want to say. But a great quarterback, accurate, high-powered offense with a defense that's just – it's almost the game manager of D.
Yeah, they don't rely on their defense like the way Michigan does to throttle the opposition and keep the game low scoring and keep them in the game. They're certainly a more offensive focused football team, and we just haven't seen that since Nick Saban's been in Tuscaloosa. It's a complete turnaround from the quarterbacks they've had that were completely unable to throw the ball, that were almost like running backs playing quarterback, and they just relied on their defense and tried not to turn the ball over. This Alabama team is nothing like that.
Well, that's what's crazy is in the past we've seen Bama be double-digit favorites over LSU, and here's LSU, third-ranked team in the country, at home on a Saturday night, and they're still getting double digits. It's because Bama's that much better, and they don't have a running back playing quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, the most interesting thing about this line isn't that Alabama's that big of a favorite. It's that they're that big of a favorite despite LSU being the number three-ranked team in the country. This isn't some slouch LSU team. This is one of the best teams in the country, and they're getting over two touchdowns at home at night. I think a lot of people are going to talk themselves into betting LSU. There'd be a lot of two-way right in this game because, believe me, Alabama money line is going to be involved in many, many parlays.
What sharp action has shown up on this game this week?
On this game, I haven't seen much yet. Okay. I mean, it looks like the market's been pushing up a little bit on Alabama. We're at 15 right now. We got as low as 14. So there's been some sharp groups offshore that have been moving the number up. We've just been moving with the market here. None of our sharper groups have weighed in on this game yet.
Yeah, it's funny. I saw some 13.5s early in the week. And what this game is overshadowing is another top 10 matchup in the SEC. You have Georgia at Kentucky. Georgia hit 10 to open the week, or at least early on Monday. Now it seems to be settling at 9 here in Lexington.
What an incredible win for Kentucky last week at Missouri.
Yeah.
That was one of the most exciting finishes we've seen in college football this year. Kentucky is a Cinderella story. You know, if they can win this game, it might be them going to Atlanta to play Alabama or LSU for the SEC championship games. This has got to be one of the biggest football games in Kentucky in my lifetime. I mean, I can't remember Kentucky Wildcats ever having this big of a game in football.
Well, there was that one game where they put the Gatorade bath on the coach, and then they gave up a Hail Mary. Right?
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
I felt like that was the most memorable Kentucky football game of my life. Yeah.
They gave up like a 80 or 75-yard Hail Mary after they'd already doused the coach with Gatorade. That was hilarious.
Kids out there, go check it out on YouTube. That was quite the memorable.
Yeah.
But that to me is the most memorable Kentucky football game in my lifetime.
I don't disagree. I can't remember them ever being, I mean, this game is on November 3rd, and Kentucky is still playing for a potential SEC championship. I mean, theoretically, they could get into the college football playoff if they were to win out. I know that sounds ridiculous, but if Kentucky won the remaining games on their schedule, including the SEC championship game, wouldn't they be in the playoff? Don't they only have one loss?
Oh, absolutely. They'd be in the playoff if they went out. Obviously, they went over Georgia. And then
that's a pretty big if.
Yeah, SEC championship game and all that.
It's all right there for them. I mean, they got to beat Georgia, and then the rest of their schedule, pretty manageable. They play at Tennessee, they play at Louisville, and they host Middle Tennessee State. But they'd have a pretty tough date in Atlanta. I assume it's going to be against Alabama. And that'd be a tough game for them to win.
Any sharp action on this game yet this week?
No, this game is another one. People are laying low on this one, at least the sharp groups are. I would imagine the public will certainly come in on Georgia. I can't blame them. They had a very impressive win over Florida last weekend. We took some sharp money on Florida early in the week last week, +7 against Georgia, and that one just went up in flames for those guys. Georgia with definitely their most impressive win of the year.
Yeah, Jake Fromm finally looking like the QB he looked like last year. Not happy feet on third down, just more poise, I think, in the pocket.
Yeah, he looked really good. And Georgia, they're getting their act together. Tough sledding in the SEC, man. It's just Alabama's still going to have to go through LSU and probably Georgia to get to the playoff undefeated. So as easy as their schedule has been to this day, it's going to be pretty tough here the next 5 weeks or so.
We mentioned old Alabama lines against LSU when they had a game manager at quarterback. Well, now we have that example here at the Big House. Ranked matchup, top 15 showdown in Ann Arbor. Fifth-ranked Michigan hosting 14th-ranked Penn State. You alluded to the Wolverines' defense earlier, but they're laying double digits here and don't exactly have a high-flying, high-octane offense.
Yeah, they're laying 10.5 right now at the Superbook. It was 10 earlier in the week. Now it's 10.5. Stop me if you've heard me say this before, Doug. I like Michigan this week. I always like Michigan.
So you like them minus 10.5?
I do, because I think it's just going to be really hard for Penn State to score in that game. They've got Penn State doesn't have the playmakers on offense that they've had in the past. And yeah, I think Michigan, I definitely think Michigan is capable of blowing them out because their defense is so good. And I think Michigan, if they have a chance to blow them out, they will, because they owe Penn State revenge from last year's game between these two teams. And it can't hurt Michigan to get the style points of a big blowout win in a game that a lot of people are going to be watching leading into that Alabama-LSU game.
Yeah, I was at that game last year in Happy Valley. I don't think they need the style points. I think the Wolverines control their own destiny. If they win out, they're in.
It's probably true, but I don't think it can hurt. I mean, it can't hurt them to thump the Nittany Lions on Saturday. But I do agree with you. If they win this game, they win in Columbus, and they win the Big Ten championship game, they should and they will get into the college football playoff.
Well, what's the scenario where they don't?
The only thing I could think of would be Oklahoma somehow having such great wins in the Big 12 that they would get in. And this is, of course, assuming that both Notre Dame and Clemson went out and secure those two positions.
Yeah, it doesn't even have to be Bama. It's just Clemson, Notre Dame would win out because the SEC champ with one loss or zero loss would be ahead of Michigan, you're saying?
Yeah, and what about this scenario, too? Let's just say LSU wins on Saturday. The winner of the LSU-Georgia SEC championship game would get into the college football playoff if they both get there with one loss. And I still think Alabama would get in if they only have one loss.
No, they won't. No, not.
Oh, I disagree with that.
Not in this scenario with undefeateds.
I disagree. I said all year last year, I said that Alabama would get in even after they lost to Auburn, and I'll say it again this year. They would get in if they only had one loss.
So, hold on. Alabama would not have got in last year if Wisconsin won the Big Ten title game.
No, that's true. But
it was
I'm
all
just
about,
saying.
It's all about.
I thought people.
It's all about needing help. Comparing previous years, not that you were, I'm saying last year at the time when Bama got in,
They
just caught a break that Ohio State with the two losses won the Big Ten. They would not have gotten in as a one-loss non-champion. And so Alabama, in this example, their best win would only be over Auburn, right? So, And if they're not even in the conference championship game, they don't even win their division, they would need help, like last year, to get into the playoff. And in this example, undefeated Notre Dame, undefeated Clemson, SEC champ are all in ahead of them. So you're saying a one-loss Bama team that did not win its division would get deference over a one-loss Michigan or one-loss Oklahoma that wins their conference? I beg to differ on that one.
I mean, we'll never know, or
we
probably
might.
Won't know, but I do think that Alabama would get in, but There's so many different scenarios that we're talking about. It's hard to really speculate for sure.
Right. No, I guess just for all the listeners at home, when you get all bent out of shape, because, look, I'm not an SEC homer. I don't want to see the SEC win every coin flip and get all the deference. But last year, they caught a break because of what happened elsewhere in college football. That's how they were able to sneak in. The year Ohio State lost at home to Michigan State with a backup quarterback, that was a loaded team. They were not as fortunate because the other conferences didn't screw it up and allow them to get in.
Right.
And so that was the difference, as we get more and more familiar with the college football playoff committee thinking.
It did make the SEC look good, though, when Georgia beat Oklahoma and Alabama thumped Clemson and you had two SEC teams in the title game. That certainly was a feather in the SEC's cap.
No doubt, and a feather in the committee's cap for that.
Yes.
For that measure as well. Okay, so we've touched on some of the ranked matchups and where the money is showing up. Let's talk about where the money is actually showing up in large manner.
Sure, I can give you some sharp plays. We've got two weeknight plays. I know the listeners out there love those games.
And the host.
Yeah, you got to force out a bet on Thursday night. I assume you're not going to want to watch that Niners-Raiders game on Thursday.
I don't know. So I got to play the bonanza
night
on that one.
Okay, well, I got a Thursday night college football play. We had a sharp group laid Northern Illinois -5. They're on the road against Akron. Saw a little bit of buyback, Akron +6.5 from another player, but the group that I respect laid 5 on Northern Illinois. Also got a Friday night play,
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Colorado +3.5. They're on the road against Arizona. Fading Kevin Sumlin, I think, is a good idea at this point. So
they were world beaters last week, I'll tell you that. Trust me, as a guy who liked Oregon.
Yeah, that was a really good win for them. That's true. But how about Colorado? The collapse and their loss to Oregon State. You know, we've got a big need here at the Superbook on Oregon State under 2.5 wins. And I happened to catch the end of that Colorado-Oregon State game. I was just sitting in Jay Cornegay's office with him. Jay Cornegay, a CSU Ram. Mm. So he was, let's say, delighted by Colorado's collapse and their loss to Oregon State. It was good for the house here, and he got a lot of fun of making fun of all of his Colorado Buffalo buddies.
So CU has lost 3 straight. Remember the Matt Schick and company, and we talked about it with Brad Edwards on the podcast here, but the likelihood and the math that they went out. Well, that didn't happen. They've lost 3 straight.
Yeah.
So the Sharp group played them +3.5 in Tucson. Yeesh.
Yep.
That's...
Now, this game actually opened 4. Moved down a little bit before those guys weighed in. They took 3.5. Right now we have the game at Arizona -3.
Khalil Tate is back, and he looked pretty good last week, but Oregon just couldn't even snap the ball. That was a weird, weird game. It was, if I didn't know better, and I'm totally joking, it looked like they were shaving points or were hungover or something.
yeah.
And I know that's a reaction on Twitter and stuff, but I don't really actually think that. I just think they were so disoriented and out of sorts. I think it was just a back-to-back game.
I love the Twitter people saying that Todd Gurley was shaving points, DK. Todd Gurley has got like $50 million guaranteed coming to him from the Rams.
I don't know if that's dumber or the buying the half point in a pick'em game, but the fact that it's a comparable shows you how stupid it is.
That is really stupid.
Yeah, we'll get into that. I pitched my editor about writing my column this week on that and just like the reaction to it and the gambling space and all that. I mean, it's just so laughable how stupid that someone thinks that like that was a point spread induced move. But neither here nor there.
What was the conversation before the game? If you find yourself in a scenario to score a touchdown to cover the spread at the very end of the game, go down. And we'll take care of you. I mean, how would you even...
Forget all the opportunities earlier in the game to fumble. Like, that would have really impacted the game. Forget all that.
Of course.
All those opportunities, right? Yeah.
Just the whole idea that these NFL, these professional athletes that make millions and millions of dollars would be shaving points is just ludicrous.
I mean, I don't even know where to go. Like, it's just, like, not even... I don't even want to dignify
How could
it.
Anyone think that?
Right. I don't even want to dignify with a conversation to a certain extent. So any other... So that covers the weekday action, although I kind of like Toledo tonight.
I haven't seen anything on that game. To tell you the truth, we did have some money show up yesterday, actually, on Miami, Ohio, +7.5. Now they lost by 9, so fortunately we didn't tape the show until after that game was over.
Yeah, that was a huge 93 total points scored in that game. Kent State Bowling Green was wild as well, 2-point conversions and down the stretch, and just a bizarre like. There are a battle of one loss teams, and they looked the part. Let's just put it that way. Or one win teams, excuse me.
Nothing on the Ball State-Toledo game. I'm sure the public will come in on Toledo, the big favorite. Right now they're laying 19 here at the Superbook. But in terms of sharper groups, I haven't seen any action on that game yet.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to Saturday.
Sure. I got a few plays for you on Saturday. We had a group that I really respect took the New Mexico Lobos. They were getting 10.5 at home against San Diego State. Now that line's down to 10. Another play I like, Cal +11. They're on the road at Washington State. That game is Saturday night. That line is now down to +10 on Cal. Washington
Classic
State,
flat
can
spot.
They really?
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Classic flat spot for Wazoo, I would assume.
Oh, absolutely. But I feel like we've said that about Washington State before. That's I thought Washington State was in a flat spot last week against Stanford, coming off that great win over Oregon. And they went out and they got the win on the road. So you can't say enough about the job Mike Leach is doing, man. That guy is just one of the best coaches in college football.
No, no doubt. And I meant to say this the last time you mentioned it on the pod. I read an article on, like, he was sort of the birthplace of the air raid offense. He was an assistant in Iowa. So, not Iowa, not the Hawkeyes, just like a small school in Iowa. And, like, the Wall Street Journal had a really cool article about the coaching staff and how it became, you know, came to be, and how he sort of invented all these crazy plays, and they were short manned. It was a really fun article, so go check that out. I believe it's the Wall Street Journal had an article. If not, it's New York Times. So it was a really fun read about, and there's a picture of old school Leach back in the day as an assistant. I love the old coaching photos when they discuss on the broadcast the coaching tree, and you see all the heads circled, right? You know, like the Parcells coaching. You see all these coaches that are, you know, older men now back in their younger days. It's so fun, the short shorts and everything.
remember how bad Washington State was before Mike Leach got there? I mean, they had that run there where their program just fell off the map. And he went there. He's resurrected that program. And they've absolutely got a shot at a Pac-12 title this year. I don't think the Pac-12 deserves consideration for the college football playoff, frankly. But I give Mike Leach full marks, and I give him a ton of credit. Washington State, they've had a great season, and the Sharp group took plus 11. That doesn't mean Washington State won't win the game. This group took the 11 points. The only other one I've seen this week, it's going to be the last game of the night, the Saturday night bailout game.
Oh,
I know you
yeah.
love those. This group laid 18 on Utah State. They are at Hawaii. That game is going to start at 9 o'clock here in Las Vegas. I got to be honest with you. I won't be able to stay up for the end of that game. I'll fall asleep.
Couple things. Let's talk about Hawaii. I do a pick. I join Will Kane every Friday, the 5 at 5 hour, and he does his 5 picks, and I get to do a pick at the end, my favorite pick. And all year, it's been Alabama first half, so I've been undefeated.
Yeah.
And so I had to come up with a real pick this week. I did Fresno State, talked about the bailout game, talked about Hawaii having to travel 30,000 miles. It was their fifth trip to the mainland. I mean, that's the kind of research you get with me, Murray. And
good stuff.
Thanks to a kick six to end the first half by the home Bulldogs, and they get the cover, win by 30. It was like lane 26. And this Hawaii team, now McDonald's back, but they're not good at all. So I can see the Utah State laying that number, but it's still like they still have to travel. I mean, Wyoming looked terrible when they made the trip to Hawaii, so that's a surprise that you got a sharp action in that game.
Yeah, we do, and it takes me back to my college years when Hawaii was actually really good, when they had June Jones, Timmy Chang, Colt Brennan, and they'd always have those midnight Saturday night games. I was living on the East Coast at the time, obviously, and we may or may not have tried to bail ourselves out with a late night play on Hawaii. You remember those teams? Those, they had one of those teams got to the Sugar Bowl.
Well, I was just about to say,
throttled by Georgia.
A little trivia question. People often ask me what my biggest bet was, and I've had some middles and things like that, but my biggest bet that I've sweated out was Georgia in a bowl game against Colt Brennan in Hawaii.
That was a good one. That was a really good pick. But the Hawaii program
wasn't my pick. I had some good collaborative information. Matt Eumanns was very helpful in that collaboration back in the day. So we had about a month to figure that game out, and that was a good.
That was a good one, Matt.
Good.
Remember,
what do they call it? Aggregation of information.
Remember, Hawaii had that receiver Ashley Lalee that I think was he on that team? I just remember him and. I don't know if he was on that Sugar Bowl team, but I remember he was a real standout for those teams. And I think he was a first-round pick by the Broncos in the NFL.
I don't recall him.
Hawaii football used to be really good, and they used to play these midnight Saturday games on the East Coast. Now we get one of those this week. And, yes, the public will be all over Utah State. But back in the days I'm talking about, I wasn't living in Vegas then, but I'm pretty sure the public was probably all over Hawaii.
Yeah, no doubt. It is a lot of the overs, a lot of the second-half overs. Especially after seeing a high-scoring first half. Let's go back to Mike Leach real quickly. Remember, there was a group in Las Vegas that really wanted him to be the next head coach of the Rebels, and that never materialized, obviously. But UNLV in some dark days right now.
Yeah, they really are. And I think this will probably be Tony Sanchez's last year at coaching UNLV. But they've got one thing on the horizon, though. They're going to be moving into the Raiders stadium. They're going to be playing their home games there. And the Fertitta family is building them a really nice facility. It should help with recruiting because they're, you know, a really nice first-class facility, playing their home games in a brand-new NFL-quality stadium. You would think that would draw some recruits to UNLV. Hopefully for them it will.
Well, they just lost to San Jose State.
Another loss season.
Yeah, they lost to San Jose State by double digits, which is really hard to do. And here they're catching 25 at home at Sam Boyd Stadium, the current home of the Rebels. Fresno State in town. Bulldogs now ranked. Jeff Tedford's done a sneakily great job out there.
Yeah.
And
any
action there on this game? Because that's another bailout game for those who can't stay up for Hawaii.
I got it pulled up right now, but we've got almost nothing on this game, but you know the public is going to be on Fresno State, and you're absolutely right. It's going to be a bailout game, 7:30 p.m. local kickoff. for sure the public will be on Fresno State in this game. I think people, you know, people always ask about, like, how much liability we have on Raiders games, Lakers games, Golden Knights games. The public will quickly turn on a team, a local team, if they're not good, man. Like, we needed the Raiders big on Sunday. The public was all over the Colts. So I think as these new states pop up, like New Jersey, like right now I'm sure they need the Eagles opponent every week. Well, when the Eagles suck one year, they're going to need the Eagles every week. Hmm. The public will turn on a team, even a local team, very quickly if they're not covering spreads.
What about the Golden Knights? What's going to happen there if they struggle?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I can tell you we're not seeing as much money on their home games as we were last year already. They had a tough loss last night at Nashville. I think it's a little too early to wave the white flag on the Golden Knights, but they're certainly off to a disappointing start. And I did notice that the ticket prices were getting a little cheaper at T-Mobile Arena.
Quick question about a trend I saw on Twitter. I forget who was posting it. Teams that play in Vegas, they're 0-6 now after playing the Golden Knights. Have you heard any rumors of the Vegas flu wreaking havoc after the game, like teams staying in Vegas an extra night or two unnecessarily before their next game?
I haven't heard that, but maybe they learned their lesson last year and they're really focusing on those Golden Knights games, and then they're having the letdown spot the next game. That would make sense.
Well,
because I know last year all the buzz was the Knights won every home game because these teams were getting out here to Las Vegas and they were partying.
Well, look, a six-game sample size is nothing to focus on for a trend. But if there's actual reason behind it, like the Vegas flu a year ago, then there could be some substance to that. And that's why I was asking if teams are, you know, let's say they play on a Vegas Tuesday and they don't play their next game until a Thursday, but it's L.A. or it's Phoenix or Colorado, so it's a short flight. Maybe they stay in Vegas Tuesday and Wednesday night and fly game day just to get some team bonding time spent in the Sin City.
Yeah, but is that the kind of team bonding you want your guys to do? I know the kind of bonding I did my younger years. I'm not sure if that's what the organization is really looking for.
But it's 82 games. They say the utility you get out of that, this is at least was some of the quotes a year ago, saying we'd rather give up a loss, or we'd rather give up a loss than get the net positive of everything else. Because it's, you know, long season, I'd rather concede a loss, so to speak, on the ice, but gain a win in the locker room, and that has a long-term effect.
The hockey season is a grind, so you're right. You don't want to get too up and down over one result, but the Golden Knights are struggling. I mean, we took a ton of money on them in the future market, I can tell you that much, but I think that it's slowed down a little bit in terms of the kind of right we're seeing on these home games, these regular season home games this year versus last year.
All right, man, that should do it for us here on the podcast. Appreciate all the input, and we will connect Thursday a little bit later. For those listening, it'll be a few hours later in the afternoon, so we'll post there. We'll get you plenty of information. Mike Clay will join us as well for some valuable information for that barn burner in the Bay Area between San Francisco and Oakland.
I can't wait for that game. That should be great. But I'll tell you the game I really am excited for, Texas-West Virginia on Saturday afternoon in Austin. It's a really big game for my Mountaineers. A lot of good college football games this week, man. Like, we've joked, myself, Ed, and Sammons, we've joked the last few weeks about how the college football cards haven't been that appealing. But I think it's because they were saving up all these games for this Saturday. There are some really great college football games to look forward to this weekend.
Well, our listeners should be looking forward to the Thursday podcast because we have to recap the Todd Gurley stuff. We get to talk about Hugh Jackson fired and Nathan J. Peterman starting this weekend. So, Murray, this podcast was made for you. You get all your stars aligned here. So I'm excited for this one.
I'm going to be so short on material now that Hugh Jackson finally got fired. At least I get to make some J. Peterman jokes tomorrow. But once they bench that guy, what am I going to have left?
Yeah, no, you're good. But this is the perfect storm for you this week, so I'm really excited for tomorrow's podcast, even more than usual, lad.
I'm excited. I'm excited about it too. And I got to go after we get off the phone here today. I got to go back to the drawing board. I got to pick another winner for Brent Musburger. I got to do that show this afternoon. Got to give Mr. Musburger another NFL winner. Those are hard to come by, man.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
That is why. All right, bud. Good luck with Mr. Musburger, Mr. Director, and we'll catch you back here tomorrow. All right, thanks to John. Straight ahead, Brad Edwards will join us, talk nerdy to us, and give us some analytics perspective and also just break down Alabama and LSU. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. Hey, gents, every man looks better and feels more confident when he puts on a suit. Indochino is expanding into casual clothing with made-to-measure chinos. Suits and shirts made to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Here's how it works. Visit a stylist at a showroom and have them take your measurements personally or measure at home yourself and shop online at Indochino.com. Choose your fabric inside and out. Choose your design customizations. Submit your measurements with your choices. Relax while your suit gets professionally tailored and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. This week, listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering Behind the Bets at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code Behind the Bets for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. Incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant, pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do a sweater. And they'll be good any time of year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Indochinos at an introductory price of $79.
Talk nerdy to me.
We are contractually obligated in the week of Alabama LSU to talk to our good friend Brad Edwards, who I am still impressed, I'm so impressed that you are still looking svelte, like we talked about at the beginning of the season. That diet has maintained.
I'm hanging in.
It wasn't a summer beach bod thing.
You know what? I actually have gained 12 pounds in the last 2 months, but I was at a good spot to begin with, and so I'm kind of hanging on. If I can get through one more month with my suit still fitting, stretching that button, you know, then I
see you
I'll
every day,
happy.
So maybe it's gradual to me, but still, I don't see the 12 pounds.
Well, I appreciate that. You and my wife got you in my corner.
Well, I'll just, you know, let's leave it at that. all right, so Bama LSU, I mean, you know this is a huge game. We've covered this. We've gone to this game. You guys are going down to Death Valley, right, this weekend?
We are. We'll be there. This will be the fourth straight Alabama LSU game at Tiger Stadium that I will have been to. All of them night games, so very familiar with this environment in addition to the rivalry itself. In fact, I think we'll now have been to 10 of the last 11 Alabama LSU games total.
Well, it's one of the highlights, and they're all, I mean, I loved that gig for Game Day Radio, but that was really one of the upper tier opportunities to go to that game, and for all the reasons everyone has heard, it's certainly like a bucket list kind of thing, and you've been spoiled to go to more than one, obviously, in your life. So let's talk about this. You know the spread. Everyone does. It's over 2 touchdowns now, up to 15 at the Superbook at the time of this taping. What do you make of that, the fact that it's over 2 touchdowns?
Doesn't surprise me. I think you start with the fact that LSU offensively is not anything special. In some ways, you can say, yeah, you know what, they've been a little bit better under Joe Burrow. But I really think as they've gotten into conference play, they have really, I don't want to say regressed to the mean, but they've looked more like what we're used to LSU offenses looking like. And we know they have great athletes. It's not like they don't have guys that they get the ball in space, could, you know, end up, you know, taking the ball 60 yards to the house. But I don't think there's a position group on that LSU offense that scares you if you have a defense the caliber of Alabama's. Certainly the quarterback doesn't scare you.
What is the caliber of that defense? That's the giant question. Inverse of that Bama team.
No, you're right. I think it's fair to say that Alabama defenses are usually great. This one is good. And there is a difference. They can be had, but it really hasn't manifested itself in teams putting together long drives. It's really been more explosive plays. Like, they are vulnerable to a big play here and there much more often than they used to be. But you still don't see teams lining up and, okay, gain 7 here, 4 there, 8 there, 6 there. You know, that stuff still isn't happening against them. You're going to need some explosive plays in order to get points. And like I said, LSU is – they're – They're okay at quarterback.
Is this the best offense they will have faced all year?
LSU?
Yeah, because there's A&M.
Oh. Wait, you're talking about Alabama's?
Is this the best offense that Alabama will have faced up until this point?
No. A&M's offense is better. Beyond that, though?
I mean, Ole Miss paper, you would thought.
No, Ole Miss on paper is a better offense, but Ole Miss's offense has lit up weaker teams, and it has struggled against good defenses.
Right, didn't do anything against Auburn.
Right.
Obviously only held to seven against LSU.
So, yeah, look, Alabama, there's no question. If you look at Alabama's schedule, they have not been tested.
How was A&M successful against Bama?
The tight end was a big part of it. They were able to – they found some gaps behind the linebackers. You were able to and of course, Alabama at that stage of the season was much less experienced in the secondary than they are now. They still are relatively inexperienced, a lot of first-year guys. There were some coverage busts, a lot of them, during the first few games of the season for Alabama. Some of those with the linebackers, some of those in the secondary. But that's where A&M really had a lot of success. That and the quarterback run. Kellen Mond ran for almost 100 yards on Alabama, and that's something you're not going to get. Like, Joe Burrow is not afraid to tuck it and run, lower his head. I mean, he'll mix it up, but he's not the kind of guy who's gonna run for, you know,
Arkansas
50, 60 yards
found
a pop.
Some holes as well. I mean, a fumble on the goal line. Not that Arkansas is good or had any chance to win the game, but they surprised me, at least in the first half.
Arkansas did, and Arkansas had success throwing to the tight end as well. And it's kind of that, you know, that general area where tight ends are usually effective is where Alabama kind of sees a lot of coverage breakdowns. That's not a huge part of LSU's offense. But once again, getting back to the point I was making, there's nothing about LSU's offense that scares you. Their running backs are not elite like they have been in recent years. Their receivers, while they're good, you know, they're not Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry like we saw a few years ago. So I just wonder, where is LSU going to get its points? Now, typically in a game like this, you look at the underdog and you say, okay, they need to force turnovers, get short fields. The problem is, if you're going to get turnovers, like multiple turnovers, you're usually depending on the quarterback to be involved, right? Like, the quarterback's going to have to make some mistakes. Tua has one turnover this season. He had a sack fumble against Missouri. That's it. Hasn't thrown a pick. And this is kind of ingrained in Alabama quarterbacks. If you go back the previous 17 games when Jalen Hurts was the starter, Alabama's starting quarterbacks have turned the ball over 4 times in the last 25 games. Wow. That is insane. And the FBS, and all of the FBS, the next best number is 8 by Army quarterbacks. So it's double that. You know, so Alabama's not going to give you anything. And so LSU probably needs to make some big plays on special teams. That's my biggest problem, Doug. Where are LSU's points going to come, even though this is not a great Alabama defense?
Especially off a bye. We've talked about it when Nick Saban had a month to prepare for Clemson last year and Kelly Bryant. Saban usually thrives when there's a month gap. This is 2 weeks. Who knows how long he's been preparing for this game, because coaches can look ahead and schedule. They just don't tell you they are. They tell their players. So I wonder, you know, to use the Belichick term, he makes quarterbacks play left-handed. What's he going to take away? What's he going to make Joe Burrow do here? Because Burrow's limited to begin with.
Yeah, look, this is, in some ways, has a feel just because of LSU's offense. You look at what Alabama's done in recent games against LSU. And both teams, actually, if you go back to the previous 3 games they've played at Tiger Stadium, night games, like I said, a very similar environment to what we'll see. I think the game played out totally different than this one will, because in all of those games, both coaches recognized that their defenses were better than their offenses. They were content to play field position. Punting is okay. Just put the other guy deep, wait for him to make the first mistake. And that was kind of the mindset of both coaches. Alabama's offense is not built to play that way. They're going to come out and from the very first possession are going to try to score touchdowns every time. Punt is a last resort for them. Field goal may even be a last resort, given that they're still struggling with their kickers. I mean, you might see Alabama go for it on fourth down in situations where they never did. They're going to be a lot more aggressive. And if they score, as we would expect they would, it's going to increase the pressure on LSU to have to make plays in the first half. They haven't had to do that before. It's typically been, okay, we'll just stay within a score. find a way to make a play in the second half, but especially with Devin White out, you know, one of LSU's best defenders, if not their best defensive player. He's one of the best defensive players in the entire SEC, if not the nation. And not having him in there, you asked about the extra time to prepare. To me, it's not what Saban's going to do defensively against Joe Burrow. It's what will Alabama's offense identify that, okay, with one half, with a much less experienced linebacker in the middle for LSU, what can they do to kind of get him out of position, exploit that weakness, and build up a lead before Devin White's able? Now, look, I don't think Alabama's offense is afraid of LSU's defense with Devin White, but it definitely will be easier to move the ball on them without him in there.
I'm glad you mentioned the half, because that's something that we've talked about a lot.
Oh, that is true.
Alabama, yes, first half line. Now, I don't think there's line value with the first half bet this week. And we talked about it earlier in the pod with Phil Steele, but the whole purpose of betting first half in these blowout games, so to speak, is you're getting 100% of Tua. And there's line value because the first half line is commensurate with the game line, but you're getting Tua all the time rather than three quarters of Tua, right? In this case, Tua is expected to play the whole game. And so,
like, maybe.
But like any sample size, any sort of math, the more permutations, the truer the outcome will be, right? So if you have a chance to play the Golden State Warriors, you want to play them in a one-minute game. You don't want to play them in a full game, right? Like the concept is you can catch a couple breaks, get lucky. Like if you flip a coin, you have to get all heads. It's more likely to get heads in back-to-back flips than 100 flips, right?
Right. Okay. So, yeah, the more possessions Alabama's offense has, the greater the chance they're going to score points.
Right, but the flip side, the allure is there was line value with Tua because he was playing the whole first half but not the game, so the backdoor covers. And then on top of that, Saban's a gentleman and all that stuff. Those are the 20-plus point spreads.
Yeah.
This one is a competitive game going in, so you actually would rather bet the full game line than a first half line, I would think.
You would think, look, in the event that Tua doesn't play in the fourth quarter again, it's going to be because Alabama's up so big that the prospect of them not winning by at least 15 is completely out of the question.
Now, there could be they're up 18-19, have the ball with 6 minutes to go, and they run and punt and, you know, just try to grind out the clock at the juncture. But I'd rather risk that than trying to get too cute with the first half on a team that's against a team that in defense that's energetic, fired up at home, Death Valley, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, look, if there's one question that is still unanswered about Tua, and maybe that's not even the best way to phrase it, if there's one way in which he has not yet been tested, it is in front of an incredibly raucous crowd, having to deal with the crowd. Obviously, he came in the national championship game, second half. That was pretty much a 50-50 crowd with Alabama, Georgia, and Atlanta.
Huge.
The stage was enormous, even bigger than this. And so you know that the moment is not going to get to him. But could he have any trouble with the crowd? Because the only three road starts that he has were Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Tennessee. And those games were done by the end of the first quarter. He never had to deal with the extended noise from the opposing crowd. And that should change this weekend. That not having Devin White in there, though, it does open up the door for Alabama to do its usual first half thing. And I can still see the allure of the first half play for people.
Because it's 8-0?
Well, not just because it's 8-0, but just because you would figure that LSU's defense won't be as good in the first half as they will be in the second half.
All right. Well, there's the counter to my thought process of the line value concept, but there's actually a football value with him missing the first half.
Yeah, what is it? Do you know yet? Is it around 9, I'm guessing?
No, it doesn't get posted till Thursday. But, yeah.
It's going to be more than 7.
More than 7.
Probably less
than
10.
Probably more than 8. So, yeah, you're looking at like 9.
It's still, I mean, just look, unless I'm completely wrong about Alabama, the idea of this game being within 10 at half, just that seems far-fetched.
Do you think Bama rolls? It sounds like.
I do.
20 plus.
I do. I think they win by 3 touchdowns or more. But a lot of that has to do with how do they get out of the gate. You know, if they don't score in the first quarter, then and they haven't pulled away at half, then I think there's a very good chance it ends up, you know, being a nail biter for them.
The college football rankings out this week, first time this season. We are conditioned now. What is it, year 5?
Yep.
Okay, so we know to not overreact. We know that the rankings are actually more what I like. They're fluid. I've always been a fan of preseason rankings. I like rankings. I think it's fine. You just have to be more fluid and not be married to them. If a team in the top 10 loses week one and looks bad, you don't rank moving to 15, 16. You unrank them. So you just have to understand, like, they're good for discussion. They're good for everything. But that doesn't mean you have to be married to them. So I liked the way the college football playoff treats it. We learned a lot the first year that Ohio State came out of nowhere because we were so conditioned to the previous era of the BCS, where if you don't lose, you don't drop. But we saw it, obviously, the final weekend of that first year where TCU blew out Iowa State, I believe it was, and still dropped because of the conference championship feather in the cap. So knowing what we know now with 4 years under the belt, first rankings, what's your biggest takeaway? I mean, we obviously know LSU and Bama are going to move after this weekend, but sort of like, what do we know after seeing the rankings that you can apply moving forward?
I think the first thing, and when the rankings started to reveal, you see NC State ranked in the top 25, which caught me off guard. And then you see Syracuse in the top 20. And when I saw those, I said Clemson might be number one. Because, look, Clemson has been very impressive, too. I know we talk about Alabama and how much they're rolling people. But since the quarterback change and since surviving the first half injury that Trevor Lawrence had against Syracuse, they've started to roll people. And I thought, you know what? With three top 25 wins versus one for Alabama, maybe the committee will put Clemson at number one.
I would have had no problem with it.
But what we saw is that the eye test, just how dominant Alabama is, that's what carried the day. And what I think we can kind of glean from that moving forward, and look, we saw this at the end of last season when Alabama was chosen over Ohio State. It was basically an eye test thing, which is that even though Alabama didn't have a top 15 win by the committee's rankings, they just thought they were the better team. If you are a Michigan or Ohio State, an Oklahoma or a West Virginia, your worst nightmare is that LSU beats Alabama, or let's say Georgia beats Alabama in the SEC championship game, because you don't want to have to contend with two SEC teams possibly getting in the playoff. And look, you figure the conference champ's going to be in. So if Alabama has one loss and is not the conference champ, you don't want the committee to be applying the eye test of them against you, even if you have a conference title. And I think that's where this thing could get interesting, and that's kind of my takeaway, is the way they applied the eye test with Alabama, as they have for all the history of the committee. I think that that's still very much in effect if Alabama were to lose a game, but would just continue to be dominant in every win.
Some futures numbers there. You mentioned Ohio State, Michigan. They're both 12-1. Georgia, 10-1. Oklahoma, 20-1. And LSU is 40-1.
You're talking about to win the
title?
Win
it all.
Okay.
Yeah. So if the Tigers win this weekend, they're going to be number one in the country, I'm assuming. Or no, probably Clemson would.
That's a tough call, because beating Alabama would be...
But LSU would have a loss.
They do have a loss. I don't know. I don't know which way the committee would go with that one.
But more importantly, so I talked about this with John Murray, an odds maker and director of one of the sports books at the Superbook. He thinks it's like totally likely that Bama gets in if they lose this game.
Yep. That's what I'm saying.
I'm saying that's what I'm gathering. You're suggesting. I completely disagree. I think they would need a lot of help like they got last year. Because the only reason Bama got in is not because, oh, it's just Bama. Like, that's just people grabbing the low-hanging fruit and not being informed, just emotional. They got lucky that Ohio State won the Big Ten title last year. If Wisconsin wins...
No, you're right.
Wisconsin's
in. And look, if Ohio State had been a one-loss Big Ten champion, not a two-loss, they would have gotten in.
Right.
And so
we want to say that, like, there's going to be two SEC teams. Oh, it's the college football. It's fixed. Like, that's noise. I want to ask you, who actually someone who blocks out the noise and looks at this in a rational manner, I think if Clemson wins out, Notre Dame wins out, right?
Well, they're in. Yeah,
and then
they
you have
out.
The Big Ten yep. champ, presumably with one loss, whether it be Michigan or Ohio State.
Yep.
And the big SEC champ, like, Bama's not going. With their best win this year would be what, Auburn at home?
That's true. It wouldn't. Their resume would probably look weaker than it did a year ago if they lose to LSU.
Right, because last year they had the LSU win.
Yeah.
And then they lost at Auburn. At least it was a more excusable loss.
Yep. Mississippi State, I think, was ranked in the back end of the top 25. So,
I think they need help. Like, I think they need help. Now, you have talked about on the podcast previously that the things that we are assuming right now in this conversation don't always happen, like Clemson winning out, Notre Dame winning out. Notre Dame still has to win some games at the end of the season. Like, who knows what USC game is, right?
Yeah.
So I just think that there's more to this than we think, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Alabama's in if they lose. Now, I don't think they're going to lose. And I just think we can't – we're cherry-picking things to fit into arguments, which is obviously
Yeah, look, that's a fair point. What you're making is that it was the situation last year was Alabama being compared to a two-loss team, not a one-loss team, certainly not to an undefeated Wisconsin, which they would have been if they had won that Big Ten championship game. And that does change the narrative. Going back to what you were saying about the odds to win the national title – I always get in conversations with people about the difference between being able to make the playoff and being able to actually win the thing if you get there. There are some teams that unquestionably can get there, but are they good enough to win two games against teams of that caliber once they do? I think that's where you got to be careful if you're taking long shots. You know, it's like this is not baseball, you know, where if you get to that point, you just, you know, have some – a couple pitchers throw well, a couple bats right, get hot, right. And you can do it. No, I mean, like, look, if Alabama and Clemson are both what we think they are and they just continue to roll people, I don't know that anybody has a chance against those two teams, especially not to knock off both of them.
Yeah, if the odds are lopsided, you can play out of your position and play the other team money line, so to speak.
I'll let you take care of all that.
Right,
that's way more thought than I've put into
it. Right, so I'm sitting on Notre Dame 50-1. So there's value there, even though I don't think they can beat either of those teams.
Yeah.
Maybe Clemson, but I just don't think they're good enough.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe you could pull one upset, but you're not beating both of them. Because if Alabama is the one seed and Clemson is the two, if you're the three or four seed, you are almost certainly going to have to beat both of those teams in order to win the national title. And I don't think anyone's good enough
to do that. And Michigan's defense contain Alabama's offense?
Contain? I mean, that depends on what you mean. I mean, Michigan, if you look at their score, they've been really good on defense for like 3 years in a row now.
Right.
If you look at their scores, see how rarely they hold a team to single digits. Now, they don't let teams get to 20 very often, but most teams are scoring 10 to 14 on them. So what would an exceptional offense do against them? Probably get in the 20s. Could Michigan's offense answer that? I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, they're getting better offensively.
Yeah.
I mean, Shea Patterson has made them better. They have Tariq Black now back at receiver, which is going to make them more explosive at that position. And so they're improving offensively, but do I think they could go hang 20-something points on Clemson or Alabama? I'm not sure.
You mentioned baseball.
Yeah.
I'm confused because I see a parade out there in Boston today.
Yeah, what's that all about?
So there's not a Game 7 tonight? I'm confused.
I don't know. I thought the Dodgers had even the series at 2 on on Saturday when I was flying back from Tallahassee, and apparently
they were up 4-0. Yeah, I don't know what happened.
That was not surprising to me. I was just, you know what? It's funny. So I had my venting session with another Dodgers fan on Monday when I got into the office, and you know, we can talk about how all the starters other than Kershaw pitched well enough for them to win. We can talk about how Dave Roberts probably made some poor decisions managing things, especially in the games in L.A. But end of the day, you got to be able to hit. And the Dodgers,
It was 45 innings.
654. They played five games, but actually six, right? Because you nine extra innings in game three. In 54 innings, the Dodgers had two innings that they scored multiple runs.
So two crooked numbers.
Two crooked numbers in 54 innings. That's not going to win. I mean, that's just, you know, not against a team that hits the ball as well as the Red Sox do.
No, I think Kershaw said it. It was a case of not playing well enough. And look, the better team won.
Absolutely.
They had every opportunity to turn it into a three-game series. And we talked about it earlier in the math, the shorter the time frame,
yep,
the more likely you are to pull an upset. So if it's a three-game series, I like my chances better than I do in a seven-game series.
Did you see the troll job by the Giants on Twitter?
I did.
Yeah.
I did.
And you know what? I hate it, but they're right. You know what? The Giants get to the World Series and they win it. The Dodgers get there and
it
they
wasn't
don't.
Unprofessional. It wasn't anything. It was playful.
Yeah,
and
it was
good fun.
Like I said, it's true.
Do.
It's right. True.
And
it hurts.
Yeah. Well, on to next year. We'll see what happens in the offseason. A lot of interesting things. I think the analytics discussion is compelling because you question a lot of the moves. But then again, the teams that have won each of the last two World Series are huge in analytics. Boston literally employs Bill James. So it's hard to bemoan some of it, but it just they weren't the better team. It comes down to
that. They weren't.
All right, man. Have fun this weekend.
Oh, I will. We all will.
It will be this will be different. This will be a different experience.
It'll be insane. Like I said, three previous times we've been down there for this night game against Alabama in Baton Rouge, and I'm not sure that any of those three games that LSU really felt like they were a national title contender going in. They were still alive in the SEC race in one or two of them, but a lot of it was just trying to ruin it for Alabama and ruin it for Saban, who they hate.
Right.
You know, but this time, and they legitimately are just as much in it as anyone else. If they win this game, I mean, their path is, I'm not going to say it's wide open, but it's pretty obvious. Look, the fact they're ranked third tells you. So this is a little bit different in that LSU is playing for just as much as Alabama is.
A lot on the line. You'll be there. Appreciate the time, bud.
You got it.
Talk nerdy to me.
All right, that does it for the podcast. Thanks to all of our guests. Brad Edwards on his way out of town, dropping some knowledge here with Alabama, LSU, and then obviously John Murray giving the sharp picks and breaking down the college football season up until this point, and Phil Steele as well. Six plays from Phil, and then we essentially got five from Murray. So the six from Phil are Auburn, Florida, Oklahoma, Sparty, Louisiana Monroe, and Marshall. And the sharp plays this week, Northern Illinois, you and I, Colorado, New Mexico, Cal, and Utah State. And obviously, those lines have moved from when they were bet behind the counter at the Superbook. So thanks to all of our guests. Good luck to everyone this weekend. Don't forget, subscribe, download, rate, and review. Kai, did I get it?
You got it. All right. Little pause there, but you got it.
Yeah, I had to think for a sec. I know there was a – usually things come in threes. These come in fours. I have to remind myself of that. Any confessions of a non-gambler, Kai?
I didn't have one for this episode particularly. I think I'm getting a little better with the lingo.
All right, so
I
you're becoming a seasoned degenerate. I like it.
I do have one, but I'm going to save it for tomorrow's podcast.
Okay, good.
I want to hear you and Murray break it down together.
Yeah, so Murray and I licking our chops. I mean, we're going to go in-depth with the Todd Gurley stuff, and I'm just flabbergasted at some of the nonsense out there on Twitter, and there's people actually arguing that the smarter play is to score, which I can't fathom and process. But
I personally can't wait to hear Murray talk about Hugh Jackson.
That's
going to be awesome.
It is an interesting observation that, especially because Hugh Jackson got fired after Ty Lue in Cleveland, which is strange. So a lot of good stuff, and we get Peterman starting a game. I'm excited for that. Go heavy on the bonanza there. So a lot of good stuff coming up on the Thursday podcast. Thanks to everyone for downloading and listening to the longer college football podcast, but obviously good guests here, and we'll catch you back here on Thursday.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.